Yes. If you have a Core 2 Duo in 2019, you're basically, you're LA level poverty. That's what you are.
Okay, first off, my Core 2 Duo does everything it does fine, okay? If I need more than a Core 2 Duo, you know, something's, you're, what are you really doing? Right?
Well, if you need more than a 486.
Right, you definitely need more than a 486. Okay, I've been there. I've been a 486.
It's all about the Pentiums, baby.
Let's get taken down.
Jeez.
Yeah, pause the mic. I can hear the song now.
All right, let's get warning. Back to some
this show is for adults. Produced by Semi. Warning, this show is for adults.
Check, check, check. Check.
Can you hear me at all?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Unfortunately, my voice is
all
weak.
About the Pentiums, baby. I've been watching people react to some of this stuff lately. It's hilarious. People who have grown up just with rap, mm-hmm. and they know nothing about like popular music, and it's just hilarious because they're watching all this stuff for the first time, going what? Like Bohemian Rhapsody, they're hearing it for like
dude,
minds are blown.
Have you seen the Bohemian Rhapsody movie?
I have not seen the movie yet.
It's so good.
I heard it was.
It is really, really good. So I thought, well, you know, it's going to be like so much of the movie. So many of the movies growing up, it was like we need our main goal with this movie is to normalize homosexuality. Right? And then, so I'm just sitting here going, I'll watch it. It looks pretty. I'm watching the girl watch it on her screen. Yeah. Can you please turn this off? You're annoying me.
I'm in this house.
Hey.
I'm afraid of a white toucan.
Oh, God. So,
Christy would love no one who were watching that.
So I thought, all right, well, it's going to be just like a movie with an agenda. Obviously, they talk about him being gay because it's a part of his who he was.
Mm-hmm.
But they the way that they did it is that the movie wasn't a message. The movie wasn't like some larger critical theory piece. It was a beautiful tribute from his friends to a person they loved.
Yeah.
And they treated his homosexuality and even his AIDS. Mm-hmm. Like it was just part of his being.
Well,
which
Brian May was very, very involved in it.
Right, him and Roger.
And Roger.
Check.
We're both. Yeah, you know, the bass guy is checked out and doesn't want to have anything to do with anything. But those two guys were so involved in the making of it. It was a love affair.
Yeah.
So they were going to be respectful for him. I knew it was going to be a great movie. People were complaining that. Well, this didn't happen exactly this way. I'm like, you can't do that. You can't make a full like. Item like, for item documentary on things anymore, but
yeah, like Chernobyl.
The feeling, you know,
Chernobyl. Yeah. You know, the words Tad was. Did you see it? You didn't like the show?
No,
you didn't like Chernobyl. You're the one. I just want to know why.
What do you mean? I'm the one they don't like it.
Everybody else loves it.
Yeah, everybody's raving.
Everybody. Raving about
I haven't
it.
Seen it myself. Yeah. I'm meaning to, but I haven't.
I had to flip the channel when they kept talking about like when they were like, "Oh, this is what this is going to do." Like that's not what a meltdown is.
I was in nuclear training when that thing happened.
That's not a meltdown.
It read like those Wikipedia. That's all I'm saying.
Those three guys are still alive.
Yeah. Well, the one died, but the
Yeah.
So I thought it was great.
Uranium's not that dangerous.
It wasn't uranium that was the problem. It was
90,000 people died.
It was the power surge that they allowed to happen because they weren't paying attention to the xenon levels.
And all the freaking safety.
They had all the safety equipment that was going to turn it off and shut it down, and they kept disabling because they're trying to get the test done.
Right.
That was the whole point. That's what the show shows.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, the Chernobyl show is much more focused on how the government screwed everything up, not leading up to the event, and afterwards when they didn't tell enough people what was going on so they could get radon pills and save them from getting throat cancer.
I let Reagan touch my show prep, and now it's all out of order. Don't let girls play with your thing. Okay. All right.
No, you're the
Stone will get you for that.
I'm behaving. I'm behaving. I'm not happy about it. No, just kidding. All right. You guys ready?
Surely.
Okay. No.
Have you seen Pirates of Silicon Valley? The old documentary type of show.
The Pirates of Silicon Valley?
Pirates of Silicon Valley with Anthony Michael Hall as Bill Gates.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country. Freedom brings people together. You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
What are you two complaining about?
We got to watch this movie right now.
Oh.
Okay. Well, we're about... I cannot believe you have not seen that movie.
All right. Let's save it for the end, boys. I have no idea what episode number this is. We're so unprofessional already. But that's what you've come to know and love about this show. My name is Chris Spangle. You're listening to We Are Libertarians. We're going to talk about my trip to L.A. I went to L.A. for the first time. And it was a third world country. So we're going to take a look at why. And some of the numbers are staggering. Harry went to a Libertarian Festival. We'll ask him about that. And Reinhold's here. So you'll be pissed. All right. Stay tuned.
Warning. This show is for adults. Produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Hello, everybody. It's so nice to be with you. It's been a couple weeks since we've been here. As you can probably tell, my voice is a little weak. Not sure what's up with that. I don't have my my normal beautiful tones.
So we're doing 4 hours tonight. We're going to blow out your voice.
Right, exactly. I won't be able to speak. All right. Yeah. So I am here with Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
Going good, going good.
Nice to see you.
I see you too.
We always have these long... turn this off. We always have these long extended breaks now from each other. I don't like it.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I find myself on Tuesdays just ranting into a mirror.
Nude, shaking your fist.
Ooh, this has been real good to say, Chris.
Reinhold is also here. Reinhold, how are you?
I am doing well.
So I've had quite the experience over the last few weeks. We'll kind of jump right into it. No foreplay tonight. No. Getting right into it. Because there's a little, you know, my voice isn't great, but I also want to record a bonus episode tonight because I want to take you behind the scenes of the Joe Rogan podcast. So now, for those of you who don't know, I hate James Neese, who is on the chat saying, change the boomer material. I don't know how you work with Neese. He has to be. Does he drive you crazy?
Only these weeks while he was banned.
Why is he on the chat? Is because he's not doing his thing.
Yeah, because you know he's not working. Hopefully he's at home, but he's also got banned. He's been banned for 3 days for the game that we play a lot in the Discord.
Did he say the word that you can say that I can't?
I don't know what word he said. Actually, I believe the email he said he was feeding. He was feeding.
He's something else. Now, for those of you who don't know, I have another podcast that I am on now. I know, just what I need, right, Reinhold? Another podcast, and it's a comedy podcast, and it's called The Pat Down, and it is with maybe the funniest person on the planet. Her name is Miss Pat. If you don't know Miss Pat, you will. She is going to be uber famous between her work ethic. She used to be a crack dealer in Atlanta. Her book, Rabbit, is one of the best books I've ever read. I mean, I read it in like 2 hours, and I'm a slow reader. And she basically went from Atlanta, in the slums of Atlanta, to my hometown in Plainfield, Indiana. And where I grew up was 98% white. Now, Abdul and Harry, in that order, are my two first black friends, and really my first experiences talking to black people.
I have to deal.
I know. But I've never, ever interacted with someone like Miss Pat, who grew up in a way that I did not grow up. Harry is bougier than I am. So
I doubt that.
You tell me about the black experience, but honestly, I think I'm more black than you.
Wow, that's just, I doubt that.
No, I don't. Reinhold, would you care to settle this?
I think it's probably a tie.
That's what I'm saying.
Toss it up. And I just got to understand, my wife comes from a family that was in, you know, her mother married a gentleman from Hallville, the black guy, and that family is so fun and loud and boisterous,
right.
And they don't hold anything back.
Yeah, and that's what it was like going to Miss Pat's house for the first time. You know, I was just like, look at Dion. I was like, are all households like this? He's like, no, this is a special kind of different. But I am super proud and honored to be like, she knew I had the equipment, so she invited me out to help her record it. And she's like, are you going to be my co-host? And I go, oh yeah, okay. And so she and I know her through Bob and Tom, and we've talked for years and always gotten along really well. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of an interesting dynamic, her coming from a place where she didn't know any white people, moving to a place where there are no black people, that I grew up where there are no black people, and I didn't. So it's her and I and our other co-host Dion Curry talking a lot about race, abortion, same-sex marriage today. It's like the funniest podcast you've probably ever heard in your life. It hit what did it chart
number
at?
Four.
It was number four on the comedy charts, and I think it was top 10 on the all around charts.
Yep.
Because Miss Pat went on Joe Rogan. So if you go to your Rogan feed and you see Miss Pat, that's the main host on the podcast that I'm on. And it's the funniest thing you've ever heard. Like, she's just, I mean, Harry, I don't know if you've seen Miss Pat, but you're definitely familiar with her from the Bob and Tom show.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I really enjoy the content, especially because you don't really feel how, I don't understand how white you are until I put you next to someone, put you next to Miss Pat. It's like, wow, that's one white boy.
Well, and she's proper funny and not like pretend funny. Like
Yeah, we are.
No, Miss Pat is a great writer and just a funny person all around. And she'll call me. We'll talk for 20 minutes a day, and it's just hilarious.
Yeah, it makes me feel like I've got no comedy timing. I suck every time I attempt any type of humor.
I can attest to that.
So many people who go and watch, you know, stand-up comedians and go, oh, I can do that. They get up there and try it on open mic night and just realize, no, you can't.
Well, with my decade of podcasting, and Dion's done comedy, I think, for like 10 years. Miss Pat's done comedy for 15. You know, it's we have good chemistry and good timing. Somebody tweeted at us, listening to the Pat Down podcast the last few weeks, Chris, I love how white you are. I mean, I'm white, but you are the whitest. So she actually said about me on Rogan, she goes, I got this white boy, Chris. He's not racist. He's just naive. So she's like, we teach him about black people. So it was a surreal experience to like hear someone talk about you on the Joe Rogan Experience. After we finish this one, do a bonus episode for the patrons, and I'll tell you all the behind the scenes. A good broadcaster would probably put it on the free side, but a good businessman puts it behind the paywall. So if you want to hear it, you need to go.
This is the tea.
That's right. You need to go join our Patreon and join us there. And we are so appreciative of everybody who is in our Patreon. You guys keep the bills going. I just rolled out something called the Libertarian Aurora, which is a brand new daily email newsletter that you can get at libertarianaurora.com, or you can go find it under the newsletter tab on wearelibertarians.com. And it's a daily summation of a bunch of emails. And so I have a service that I'm using to kind of compile some of this stuff, and that costs money. And so we were able to do this new email newsletter, a daily email newsletter, because of our patrons, like our $100 a month contributors, intern Ed Brehab, Christy Avery, Craig DaCosta, Jason Doolittle, and the Libertarian Coalition. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you being $100 a month contributors, and all of our patrons. So please join our Patreon, and you'll be able to listen to that exclusive content that you can only get behind the paywall. So it was just a very real, surreal experience to like go meet Joe Rogan, be there. We'll talk a little bit about it, but that required me flying to LA. Now, I have never been to LA. Have you guys been to LA?
I have been to LA several times.
Just LAX. That's it. I've been to San Francisco and all through the poop apocalypse, which is San Francisco.
Okay. I'm going to ask you about San Francisco because here's the thing that I want listeners to understand. You hear the stories, or in passing you hear the jokes and the memes about San Francisco and California and it's a third world country. It's another thing when you get there. When you're driving around a town in California or like L.A., L.A. was the most beautiful, weirdest, in some ways libertarian city. It doesn't seem like there's any code, any zoning regulations whatsoever. And then like armed security everywhere because everybody knows the police can't protect them. I mean, here's the thing.
You don't want the police protecting you out there.
Right.
Especially if you're
everybody. A little darker. Yeah, exactly.
So libertarian paradise is, that makes sense.
Mad Max. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, Somalia.
Venice Beach. Oh, just that is just like hippie central.
Here's how broke
headquarters for
here's how broke Dick California is. I'm on Venice Beach and there's a pot dispensary that's closed up and out of business. I go, how the hell do you fail at running a pot business?
Damn. I think that was one of the first ones too. I know which one you're talking about. I didn't know it was closed yet, but it's I remember seeing that there when I was out there 20 years ago.
Kind of like on a corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was
right on the beach.
Yeah, there's a guy with a karaoke machine.
You had to have a doctor's prescription to get in there and get anything at the time. You don't anymore, but I mean at the time you had to have a doctor's prescription for glaucoma or some
right.
other thing.
I got the headaches. Approved.
So I land in L.A. on a Monday morning. I get up at like 5 my time, 2 L.A. time, and I fly in, and it's like 8 a.m., and I get off the plane at 8 a.m., and I'm like, well, I can't check in until 12:30. Now what? And I was never more productive. Jeremiah, the boss hog of Liberty, goes, I'm never more productive than I am in L.A., and it's true. Like, I was up from 2 to 10 that day, and then from 3 to midnight, 3 to 1 a.m. the next day, I got so much done. Like, the second day I was there, it was like I had gone to the beach, I had exercised, I had gone to breakfast, I had done all my work, I had done some wall stuff, and then it was like 8 a.m. So that first day, I just decided to get a car. I'm like, whenever I travel and I go to a place like this, I like to rent a car, and then I like to drive around just so I can see the different areas, because you know the touristy areas, but I want to see what a city's really like. You know, I really want to know what a Philadelphia or a Boston is really like. And so I did that with L.A., and I get in the car, and I go over to Venice Beach, and I walk around there, see Muscle Beach, and that was kind of cool. And then drive up to Malibu on the Pacific Coast Highway or whatever that road is. And it's beautiful. It's like you're on the beach and then you look up and there's a giant mountain to the right. You know, and LA is crazy because you go from beach to mountain to valley to beach, and then there's like cities everywhere. It's not like New York City. If you've been to Manhattan, like that's just one big ass city. And even here in Indianapolis, it's like
very spread out here.
Yeah, it's like there's a city in the middle, and then there's houses out in rings around it, and it's just kind of like contained. You know, there's the beginning of the city on the edge of Greenwood, and then you go to Carmel, and then there's no more city. But between then and there, but in California, it was like you drive, and then you go over a mountain, and then there's like another city, but it's all LA still. So it's just the topography was really crazy. And so I drove up to Malibu, and then I got onto Sunset Boulevard, and I drove down Sunset Boulevard into Malibu, kind of checking that out. And then I ended up in Brentwood on the 25th anniversary of OJ killing his wife. So obviously I need to go see where OJ lived. It's the 25th anniversary. I've watched all the documentaries, the TV shows. Like,
Wait. He was innocent. He was found,
allegedly killed his wife.
Found not guilty in a court of law.
Have you guys seen his Twitter Ryan yet?
Oh, he's on Twitter now.
It's hilarious. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm fascinated.
Now you're going to hear from me, not from people pretending to be me or telling you what I think. This is going to be me telling you this stuff.
OJ to me is just like a fascinating character, and I think it's because I was in like what? How old were we when that happened? That was 94. So I was like fourth grade. Yeah. So you're kind of in a formative age, and you're old enough to understand what's going on. They rolled the TV in during the verdict in my elementary school lunch, and we watched the verdict.
I watched the Bronco chase.
Yeah.
We watched it in a nightclub after a friend of mine's comedy show. He comes into town once a year. He used to. And we'd go play golf and do stuff, and then go to the shows.
Right.
And it was after that show, we're all in the bar watching it on the TV, and it's just like...
I was in Florida. I mean, I know exactly what... We were going to see a movie, and we had stopped by a friend's condo, and we're like... watching The Chase. My dad's like, I don't want to go to the movie. I want to watch what happens to this. And you watch the ESPN documentary and you just realize, like, as an adult, I watched it and I go, oh, he was guilty as hell. But when you're younger and you don't know a lot, like, you don't know, it's 50-50. But I was riveted by it.
You set up, okay, by the LAPD?
Right. By a racist LAPD Mark Furman. And so you watch these documentaries and all this stuff, and then to go to where he lived, the street is, like, minuscule. Like, there is, it's a two-lane street. I don't know how all those reporters and everybody were on that street, because it was so damn narrow. It was amazing. But his Twitter is crazy. He's such a weird, he's like, he just has this way of talking where he's just so jovial and he's, everything's great. But I'm going to tell you these, what?
Put that back over there.
Why? So people won't read my credit card on the...
The last four digits are actually the ones that you really want to get. The first eight or the ones are easy to guess.
So I had put my phone face down where my credit cards were face up in front of the camera, and Harry's like, but it's 480 on YouTube, so it's, trust me, you're not seeing anything.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how... So, good
quality. I have nothing to steal. So he just has this, OJ has this way of talking where it's just like most of these narcissists. They, you know, I'm just telling you exactly, I'm going to prevent it. And he's just being fake as hell. He's like, you know, I just want you to know he was never my manager. I don't know what he's talking about. I'd probably kill him too if I had the chance, but I'm just your friendly neighborhood OJ coming to you live. Like, you watch it, I'm just, what a freak.
Well, he wrote a book. Saying, yeah. I didn't do it.
If I did.
But if I did, this is how it went down, and how I would have planned it and everything else. And it's all exactly what happened.
And he did it with Judith Regan, who was this huge book publisher. And then they do a sit-down television special where he sits in a chair across from her, and she interviews him. And he basically outlines, like, now listen, I didn't kill Nicole. I love Nicole. But if I killed Nicole, this is how I'd do it. And then he goes step by step in how he would kill his wife. And as you're listening to this and I'm watching the special, I'm going, this is a confession tape. And that's why Fox didn't put it out originally. They put it out like a couple years ago.
What I understand is he can't get caught for double jeopardy anymore.
Right.
He's been, he was found not guilty in the state level. Mm-hmm. They went after him for... civil damages,
right?
And then he had to pay civil damages, so he can't be tried for it. Why not just come out and say, "Hey, you know,"
OJ more than anything wants people to like him. His reputation is the most important thing in the world to him, and it's just very clear. You watch the long ESPN documentary about him. It's one of the best documentaries ever.
Here's the thing. Everybody already assumes he did it.
Right. Well, he doesn't think that.
And
everyone.
And just look at what's going on with Trump. Trump says he could kill somebody on the street and everybody would still love him, and he's probably true.
No, it's true.
So
it's true.
He would
Trust me, I've been arguing
him.
With people that children actually do need blankets in bathrooms. I have Republicans saying no.
Larry Bird could probably run over somebody in the street, and they would probably apologize for being in Larry Bird's way.
Right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bird.
Are we going to name names on that?
Oh, yes.
Alleged. What?
No, I'll talk about that later. Okay. I will right. say, though, if you, I think it's 294 is the episode, 294
yeah.
is the border episode that we did last year. Yeah. Harry and I basically, we did hours and hours, I mean dozens of hours of research into the show, basically going to every source we could find, trying to figure out exactly what was happening on the border and why it was happening and the laws. And we put together a really, really good show. And it's a long show, but it explains everything that's happening at the border. And I would go back and listen to that, because we're going to be talking about that subject next week. I'm still too pissed to talk about it, so we didn't do it tonight.
Well, and also the show notes for that show
are tremendous.
Extensive. Yeah,
tremendous. The biggest show notes you've ever seen.
Ever.
Episode 294, I'll put it in the show notes for this episode, but go and listen to that before you listen to the next episode. It's getting a tremendous amount of downloads right now, because... What we have heard from people over the last few days as we've reshared it is this is the most fair breakdown I've heard. It tells you the truth, and we give it to both sides, and we give credit to both sides, and we just tried to figure out exactly what was going on and look at the facts as they are. I wrote an article today at wearelibertarians.com that I'll also put in the show notes that basically says, hey, here's the this, go listen to it, here's an update of what's happened, here's kind of what I think of it. I personally think, and I know we're way off topic, but we'll talk more about it next week, but I personally think that we're completely bathing in hyperbole all the time, and we don't trust anything that's in front of our eyes. But if you actually go and read that New York Times article that has the word stench in it, or you go listen to the WBUR interview with the women who are the subject of that that New York Times article, and you hear their stories and you hear from medical doctors, which I will put this in the show notes so you can get caught up for next week. We'll play a lot of those interviews actually next week, because I think you need to hear the firsthand sources of what's happening in your name, on your dime, at the border. I think it's one of the most morally reprehensible things I've ever heard in my life. Like, you can agree with Donald Trump on immigration and still think that these kids should be allowed to poop in a bathroom, or that babies should be allowed to be nursed by their mothers and not 12-year-old girls.
Or just not die.
Or just not die. There's been six deaths since September in these detention centers. So we'll kind of explain why there's an uptick, what's happening, in more depth next week. But I just want you, if this is on your mind and you're thinking about it and you're kind of like, all right, I see this point of view, I see that point of view, a lot of those things still apply. And we're going to talk more about, less about the legal aspect and more about the moral aspect next week. But really what this episode and that episode kind of go together, because I think there's some signs of, serious signs of decay in our society. And I think there's some serious signs that we are heading to a very, possibly to a very dark place if we don't turn some things around. And, you know, when you have a major city like LA, as I drove around, I drove up into Brentwood and then into Bel Air and then into Beverly Hills. And so my first experience with LA was Venice Beach, which is a shithole. It's a shithole third world country. And as I went to go see the bodybuilding mecca,
paradise.
That's why it's a shithole, Reinhold. I know you're a leftist, but as I drove through Venice and I get around the bodybuilding mecca, like you go down side streets in Venice and there are permanent tents set up. The homeless problem in LA is worse than you hear on TV. As I drove, it isn't up in Brentwood or Malibu or. But once you get into kind of Hollywood, they keep the homeless kind of at bay there a little bit. But then you drive down into Middletown, or you drive down, you know, into Venice, then or downtown. That's when, or any freeway underpass.
Oof.
That's when you really start to see how bad the homeless problem is in LA.
Well, in the desert, if you go out to the desert areas, there's tent cities right now for homeless people.
Yeah,
and.
The beaches.
It's just like everybody talks about how great the economy is. I'm like, the economy is not that great. It's just people are falling off of being counted and noticed and existing within their society these days.
And so as you drive through LA, here's how I would describe what I saw. Everybody has that part of town that is stuck in 1970. Like for us, it's Pendleton Pike. If you drive up Pendleton Pike, it looks like it's stuck in 1970. And imagine Pendleton Pike. Imagine Pendleton Pike, and it's like 150 little Pendleton Pike cities with a lot of homeless people and way more trash. Mm-hmm. And then like the Carmel Palladium, which is a giant stone opera house here in the richest city in the area called Carmel. These palatial estates. $30 million homes surrounded by high garden walls. Like everybody had a gate. Everybody had security. Not just the mansions had gates. Your average home has gates, bars on the windows. It's just a very eerie place to be because you go from complete luxury wealth, Rodeo Drive, and you go three blocks south and it's crushing poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it makes you wonder. It lets you know that this is why all these people from California always talk about wealth inequality so much, because there it is blatant in their face. Yep. Versus, you know, the rich people here in the Midwest who has the kindness, you know, the kind decency to go out in the suburbs and put themselves, you know, put acres between us and them.
Well, what's funny is that those houses you're talking about, you know, the $30 million homes, the high, or the $100 million homes and everything, the houses next to them that are the crap holes, the little tiny little huts, little bungalows that have like two rooms, they're over $1 million themselves.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just incredibly crazy out there. And I was out there once for work and was staying in a hotel that was right on the corner, right on the line of Beverly Hills and Hollywood. And you could see the difference. It just on that street from one side of the street to the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what the biggest reason is housing prices. And so I'm not an economist. I'm just an idiot with a microphone that knows how to somehow get people to listen to him. And so I do this show because I read very smart people and regurgitate what they've told me. So I am not an economist, but I do know a good economist, and his name is Thomas Sowell. Mm-hmm. I know you're a big Thomas Sowell, Harry, big fan. Mm-hmm. Any particular reason why?
Well, I love his work.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also made a piece of work, a great book called Black Rednecks and White Liberals, which is the book that I was seeking for that I didn't know existed my entire life.
Yeah. And basically, it's talking about how poor whites in the South have the same culture as blacks because they were all existed in the
exact same spot.
In the same spot, the same ecosystem, the same economic sphere. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to think that all whites in the South were plantation owners, but really, it's why, honestly, you know, being around Miss Pat, like, I really connect with Miss Pat, and I see a lot of white fans of the Bob and Tom Show, for instance, or Joe Rogan connect to Miss Pat, and it's because there is a similarity in culture as opposed to, you know, your more waspy, Bush-like figures, you know, because there's...
Fluffy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, that's just Southern or Southern culture.
Right.
Versus the... When a lot of people say that, you know, I'm very white. It's like, well, my family's mostly from New England. It's been New England for, you know, about 100 years. So I act more New England than anything.
Yeah. So he is a great economist. Basic economics is great. And in this interview that he does, he works for the Hoover Institution. And he's talking on uncommon knowledge with Peter Robinson. And the video is titled Thomas Sowell and the Housing Boom and Bust. I will put it in the show notes. And he explains why housing prices in LA and California in general are so high.
Segment one, the economics of the housing boom. I quote you to yourself, Tom, from the Housing Boom and Bust. Quote, although the housing boom and bust has national repercussions, its origins tended to be concentrated in particular places. Explain that.
Yes, most of the adventurous financing was concentrated in places like coastal California, Phoenix, a few places in Florida. And this is where the great bulk of the defaults and foreclosures occurred as well in later years. In fact, you can break it down even finer that it's in particular counties in these states. So really a very small part of the United States generated the delinquencies, the defaults, and the foreclosures, which then snowballed across the country through the financial system and even spread overseas. But the origins were in these extremely expensive areas where the prices had been forced up artificially and where people in desperation had turned to all kinds of creative financing, such as no money down, adjustable rate mortgages, subprime mortgages, all sorts of gimmicks in order to buy a house to live in, or, and this would be true of about at least 20% of the people who bought houses during the boom, as pure speculation. So that given the lax lending standards, a speculator could come in and buy four or five expensive houses with a relatively small amount of money down, spruce them up, and sell them within a very short time.
Tom, you mentioned the phrase you used there just a moment ago, that the prices in these small number of housing markets, the prices had been driven artificially high.
Yes.
And I have to say, in reading The Housing Boom and Bust, you and I both live in coastal California.
Yes.
And a lot of what you said cut pretty close to the bone here. As you sit across the table from a man with a gigantic mortgage, why were the housing prices artificially high in that handful of markets?
Because despite the abundance of land in California, laws prevented people from building on much of that land and made it prohibitively expensive on the rest of the land, so that the housing prices were shot up primarily because the land on which the houses were built were tremendously expensive.
So the whole open space movement.
Oh, yes. And I lived in one of those houses on the Stanford campus, and I remember, this shows how long ago it was, the house was $260,000. I saw in my insurance that it was insured for only $60,000. So that's the cost of replacing the house. The other $200,000 was for the leasing of the land. I didn't even own the land. And so it's the land that is really the key to this whole thing. That same house, incidentally, I'm told now, has sold for over $1 million, even though it's less than 2,000 square feet.
All right.
You have the open space movement where we want a lot of land, we want a lot of open space for the, you know, Alaskan sea turtle and his friend mm-hmm. the troglodyte to like play together. And then what that does is by reserving all of that open space, you end up artificially inflating the land in places like LA, which drives up the value of the land. So your house that you're like, the house was worth $200,000 or $60,000, but the land it's on is worth $1 million. And that is kind of like that's kind of everywhere. Like your house is really if you're renting your land, basically, you may pay for the house to be built, but the total appraised value of your home, your house, isn't worth nearly as much as the land a lot of times.
Yeah, generally.
So, Reinhold, you disagree?
No, I mean I was just trying to think about my place, and I've got 40 acres though, so my land's going to be a lot
more valuable,
than the house, but it's about close the same.
So as the
you could always build houses, they're not building land.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have kind of a perfect storm of a lot of things. First is the since the 1970s, the growth of housing prices. Mm-hmm. And so you end up in LA with a situation where housing gets more and more expensive. And so services keep expanding because they keep taxing on services. And then taxes must be raised because we need to pay for the services. And then everybody starts going, "You're strangling me. I'm leaving." And what you end up with is the middle class exiting LA, and then the rich are fine. And then you have a tremendous amount of immigrants, the poorest rung of society basically coming into the county. Mm-hmm. And so your population isn't really changing. It's growing a little bit, but it's being cut out of the middle and they're fleeing to other states. And so that leaves less job creators, that leaves less taxpayers, that leaves more people trying to use services, you're adding more services. And you end up with a situation like LA where things become more expensive, services become harder to come by, and it has everything to do with the amount of revenue that is being taken from taxpayers mm-hmm. and also a lot of regulation.
Yeah. That's the other thing, is the regulation that's there that you – there was a person who was wanting to build some low-income housing in L.A., and he had the land. He bought the land, and he wanted to get the permits and everything else to actually do what he was intending to do. And he spent 3 years going through all of the tape and all the hoops and the costs and everything else of trying to get all that. He finally just threw his hands up in the air and quit.
Right.
Walked away.
Yeah. I was trying to look for like this same, I think about maybe the same story Ryan will talk about. It was in Reason where guy did, he bought a shop and then he wanted just to build up. Mm-hmm. You know, because you couldn't go sideways, and he was hampered by trying to build up because he had to get a shadow study done,
right?
To find out who he was blanketing in shadow. It's like, oh, there's a school back here. He's possibly going to put this entire school playground in shadow, which he doesn't. But they still made him do the shadow study. Finally, to do it, and he kept going back and getting these permits.
Yeah,
yeah. But what happens if you shadow somebody who's doing solar panels for their electricity. Now you've cut them off, and now they can't. So that's it's all that stuff that they're trying to manage the outcomes of. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to make things equal or even, or just making sure to regulate interactions between individuals. They're wanting to a desired outcome to come out of it, and it's failing miserably to do mm-hmm. that.
And the real thing that's failing is because I always tell most of the problems in the area is a capitalism problem. Mm-hmm. That they not that capitalism is running amok, is that their capitalism is trying to fix it, and they keep trying to subsidize the socialism, trying to make it work for them.
Right?
Capitalism is telling them, like, all you people can't live here; you have to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it's and it's California is the physical state is, you know, basically attacking these people. It's like, listen, this is a desert. Here's a drought.
Right.
Here's a drought. You have no more water. Your water bill is going to be out astronomical because you shouldn't be living here in a desert living like you should, but you do. But people do. Green grass, people taking showers, there's pools everywhere.
Right.
You know, and it's a ridiculous notion that all these people should live in this desert because because the internet has made it so that you can live anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. All these jobs, everything that you do there can be done anywhere else.
Right.
You know, there's nothing that really happens there that that can't happen anywhere else.
Well, the weather,
they force it to there.
The weather and the topography is amazing. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life.
There's something about watching the sun set over the ocean.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been on the East Coast and I've seen it rise over the ocean, but it's just not the same as that feeling you get when you see it dipping down and the air, the way the air feels. You walk out, I'd walk out from my hotel rooms to go to my car, and it doesn't feel like I've left the building because it's just so perfect.
It's like San Diego, in my opinion, is better weather, but
Palm Springs was like that.
It's just like 70 and sunny all the time.
I get that. But at this exact same time, it's like all these people cannot be there.
Right.
You know?
Well, and they're all fleeing to Austin right now.
So. Yeah.
Right. And but the other thing is, it's, I get it. I get it that it's beautiful. I get that. I see that. But that area can't handle that many people if you're trying to subsidize everything else.
Yeah.
You're lucky that you went and decided to do the rental car instead of running the BART system.
There was very little public transportation, which I found amazing.
Yeah, San Francisco, they have the BART system, and it's, you can't walk on that thing without seeing just discarded needles
right everywhere. Poop. Apocalypse in San Francisco.
You can watch videos and pictures now of people just walking in the street. They just stop, bend down, poo on the ground, and go and walk away.
So I didn't see any poop. Excuse me, I didn't see any poop, but I did.
I saw poop.
I tried to go. I didn't get the chance to go to Skid Row, but I found this. Basically, it's called "No Place to Go: An Audit of the Public Toilet Crisis on Skid Row," and it's basically a paper.
Why we need a public toilet.
Republican
mayor, right. That's all they need. They just need Mike Pence to come in and wash
them. Basically called, you know, No Place to Go, and it's about Skid Row in L.A., which is just a permanent homeless camp, essentially. And they talk a lot about why there is a toilet crisis in a place like L.A. and what a problem. So your standard, basically, the U.N. has for refugees has basically said you should never be more than 50 feet from a toilet, 20 people to a toilet. And during overnight hours, 9 to 6 a.m., there are only 9 public toilets available for 1,700 unsheltered homeless people on Skid Row, and they're largely inaccessible. So that's 80 toilets. They're short 80 toilets in the area. When the overnight occupants are released onto the street, they're short 164 public toilets, and 38% of audited toilets were not operating during supposedly open hours. So this is government. This is the failure of government to actually provide any kind of services. Yes, it is. Here's the thing. I think a lot of people will go, well, a homeless person chooses to be homeless. And that's not the case, because a lot of the people interviewed in this and in a lot of things that I read about the LA homeless crisis, these are people who had white collar jobs and they just had a bad divorce and ended up on the street. And then it spirals. You know, I don't think people realize how close, when you live in a place like LA, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and then you have one bad life situation and you're homeless. And then from there, your life just kind of spirals and spirals and spirals. So, like, and as we heard, the housing crisis, for instance, is caused by the government and their policies, taxation. And so you have the human cost of public policy is basically that people, more people end up homeless, more people end up hungry, more people end up pooping on the streets. And then when you're at your most vulnerable stage, the government continues to fail you over and over and over. And so during overnight hours, the public toilets, they have automated public toilets that are powered down and inaccessible at night. When they're powered up, they're often obstructed or impossible to enter. Many of the public toilets lack any kind of stalls or doors that lock. They're infrequently maintained. Many are soiled with fecal matter and debris. Many public toilets require the user to request individual sheets of toilet paper from security guards. No sinks, no paper towels, no toilet paper, no seat covers, no menstrual products. All lack a baby changing table. Toilets without attendants or some monitoring have the lowest use levels. Most toilets were ADA accessible, and the exception are the portable toilets. And the ones that do have security guards, women are generally too afraid to actually approach the security guards to use those toilets. And so this has actually a personal health. There's consequences to this. So people suffer humiliation of having to urinate and defecate in the street, the sidewalk, a bucket, or themselves. They do not have a place to wash their hands before eating food, so that causes more disease. People avoid taking medication with side effects that cause frequent urination or diarrhea. And people find it more difficult to get out of homelessness because they lack toilet access. It degrades their appearances, their feelings of self-worth, and their mental health. And it's harder to apply and get a job. And so, you know, then they go on to kind of talk about solutions, which are the government needs to do more. The government needs to do more. In a place like LA, what happens is you get a well-meaning paper like this, and they go and they talk to the well-meaning politician, and they say, we have a well-meaning solution for this big crisis that we all have, and so we need you to fund this. That is a good idea. Let's fund this. Let's pass this. And it becomes a mandate, and they put a restriction on this, and they put a tax for this, and they require people to do this, and they and the government starts dictating things, and at the barrel of the gun, you better obey or you're going to prison. And so people end up getting totally constrained. I don't think, like, I think the border situation is a great example. In short, Trump has changed the ways he's enforcing laws. He then it says we're detaining more people. So what these detention centers were built to hold 100 people, they're now holding 300 people. And then he sends out a tweet about Mexico and threatens tariffs, and that doubles the amount of people running towards the border. They're capturing more people. So now it's 500 people. And then the budget for the supplies in the detention center never changed. The security guards have no ability to buy more supplies. They have no authorization to do other things other than what they're told to do. And so you end up increasing the demand, but you never increase the supply because of bureaucratic intraction. And so that is the nightmare that is LA. That is the nightmare that is relying on the government to do anything. Watch Chernobyl. You see the bureaucratic inaction and how the blame game ends up costing more people lives. They just deny that there's a problem, or they appear to be doing something, yet they never do anything effectively because there's no more resources to get. And so well-meaning people like this, she's right. Those people do deserve a toilet. Their lives would be better served if they had access to a public toilet. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one little piece of the entire picture of the life of the homeless crisis in LA. And there's thousands of these little well-meaning things that we want the government to do on a daily basis, and hundreds of laws that are passed by the LA City Council every year. And it, over time, it just leads to a completely intractable situation where your middle class, who run the majority of the small businesses, which make up the majority of the middle class jobs, leave. They go to Texas. Mm-hmm. And so there's less jobs, there's less housing, there's more homeless, there's less services for those homeless, and you end up with the nightmare that is LA.
So is just YouTube and Twitch, is that just subsidizing, like, trying to subsidize middle class people? get them working.
That's
why all the YouTubers are in LA, because it's the only jobs they can really get. That's right. Why they hit it so hard in the paint. It's like, this is it. If I can't do this, go to Texas.
So let me give you a few facts. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, but the thing is like, yes, they deserve a toilet, but they can't, but not there.
I totally agree with you.
And you're right. Like, I'm over here entertaining Reinhold with pictures of the Black Death, because if they're pooping and stuff in the streets and the rats and they're not washing their hands, this is how all these diseases spread. You've got all these people complaining about anti-vaxxers and how we don't want the measles and all these other drugs. But if you got all these people in L.A. pooping on the streets with their mice and their fleas.
A suburban white child that is 9 months old, yeah, who never sees anybody,
mm-hmm,
that's not going to put you at risk for measles.
Yeah.
Susan, who's the anti-vaxxer at daycare, is not your enemy. It's the typhus spread by the fleas from the oncoming housing homeless crisis that's where the danger lies. So let me give you a few facts about L.A. It's from 2015, but it's by Hector Tabar in the New York Times, How Los Angeles is Becoming a Third World City. He moved from a third world city. And he writes, the paradox of increasing homelessness and rising prosperity has finally gotten Los Angeles talking about inequality. But the gap between rich and poor has been building for 40 years, and every boom and bust simply accentuates the trend. Bill Boyarsky, a retired city editor at the Los Angeles Times, dates the beginning of the decline of the industrial L.A. in the 70s. Quote, we lost a huge number of middle class jobs at the same time the tax revolt led by the businessman and politician Howard Jarvis cut funding for public education. We ended up limiting the ability of kids to move ahead of their parents. Los Angeles still has a much larger middle class than your average developing world city, but privilege and inequality are spreading in all sorts of public places. Rich and poor have long suffered the freeway together, Porsches and pickups alike, gridlocked. Now we have new toll roads. On some freeways, you can literally buy your way into the fast lane. Dodger Stadium used to be one of the city's most democratic entertainment venues. In 62, the most expensive seat was $550, about four times the price of a bleacher. Now it's 30 times more expensive at $1,000. 30 years ago, a family of four at poverty level lived on about $10,000, about double the annual tuition of the city's top prep schools. The equivalent federal poverty line today, $24,000, would barely cover two-thirds of this year's tuitions at schools like Harvard, Westlake, or Polytechnica in Pasadena. In the cities of the developing world, class differences this wide are fixed. Homelessness is a kind of caste, and the poor city dwellers live in permanent squatter communities. In Buenos Aires, where I once lived, their homes are often built with discarded bricks and tiles. L.A. doesn't have neighborhoods like that yet, but homelessness has become semi-permanent in many places. A decade ago, a man created a shelter under a bridge across the street from my in-laws in South Pasadena. A series of homeless people have occupied it ever since. So it shows you the amount of inequality. And I would love to get my cat off of my next article so I can read that, but there was another great article by Victor Davis Hanson, who, when it comes to foreign policy, I'm not much for. Reinhold, you and I are probably not Victor Davis Hanson fans overall. But he has written a stellar article on California and in its first third world state. And again, this is from June 17th. This was actually a few days ago. Look at this, very timely. Third world is now, and basically he talks about a third world, kind of, it used to mean in the Cold War era, you had the first world, like us and the USSR, and then the second tier was kind of your developing nations, or like a Germany who was a feeder state, and then there was the third world, the people who didn't have any attachment to either the US or the USSR. And they were always very poor because they weren't feeder states. So think Somalia, Venezuela, Cuba, or Libya. And so does LA really fit, does California really fit the definition of a third world country? I tend to think not yet, but I definitely think that it's heading in that direction. And then he kind of talks about some signs that I'll read in a moment.
It looks like a duck.
Oh. Well, there's a lot of wealth in LA, and there's a lot of opportunity in LA, but it's not being achieved or realized, right? So it's not like Somalia or someplace like that where you have a couple of people who are like the warlords and they have all the money and all the wealth and Idi Amin, that sort of thing. But then, and the people are poor. It's more a case of a self-inflicted, we have the haves, we have the have-nots, right?
Right.
So I don't know if you could call it a third world, but you can say it's not... It's not second world either.
So let's hear him out. Let's hear his argument. I won't read the whole article. I'll kind of give you some of the stats that I just were blown. I was blown away by a lot of these, and it's never ceasing. This is a 6-page, never ceasing parade of facts about how bad things are in California that blew my mind. So by many criteria, 21st century California is both the poorest and richest state. Almost a quarter of the population lives below the poverty line in California. Another fifth is categorized as near poverty level. Facts not true during the latter 20th century. So in the late 1900s, 1980, 1990, that wasn't true. It's rapidly increased in California, the amount of people below the poverty line or near it. A third of the nation's welfare recipients now live in California. The state has the highest homeless population in the nation, 135,000. About 22% of the nation's total homeless population resides in the state, whose economy is the largest in the United States, fueling the greatest numbers of American billionaires and high-income zip codes. By some indicators, the California middle class is shrinking because of massive regulation, high taxes, green zoning, and accompanying high housing prices. Out of migration from the state remains largely a phenomenon of the middle and upper class. Millions have left California in the last 30 years, replaced by indigent and often illegal immigrants, along with the young, affluent, and single. If someone predicted half a century ago that the LAPD police station, or indeed LA City Hall, would be in danger of periodic flea-borne infectious typhus outbreaks, he would have been considered unhinged. After all, the city that gave us the modern freeway system is not supposed to resemble Justinian's 6th century Constantinople. Yet typhus, along with outbreaks of infectious hepatitis A, are in the news on California streets. The sidewalks of the state's major cities are homes to piles of needles, feces, and refuge. Hygienists warn that permissive municipal governments are setting the stage, through spiking populations of history's banes of fleas, lice, and rats, for possible dark age outbreaks of plagues or worse. Now, high tech doesn't do its part to clean the streets. It just creates apps telling you where the defecation piles are. In California logic, public defecation butts up against progressive tolerance, so it is exempt from the law. Yet for a suburbanite to build a patio without a permit, for example, costs one dearly in fines. Indeed, a new patio without a permit can be deemed more dangerous to the public health than piles of excrement in a public workplace. One out of three Californians who enter a hospital for any cause is now found to be suffering from either diabetes or prediabetes, an epidemic that hits the Hispanic community especially hard, but for a variety of reasons has not led to effective public health efforts and sufficient publicity. State-run dialysis clinics now dot the towns and communities of the Central Valley, a tragic symptom of dietary culture, massive illegal immigration, and poor public health education. So now on to infrastructure. California's transportation system, to be honest, remains in near ruins. Despite the highest gas taxes in the nation, none of its major trans-state freeways, not the 99, the I-5, not 101 after 70 years of use, are yet completed with 6 lanes, resulting in dangerous bottlenecks. So he says, driving 99 south of Visalia or 5 north of Coalinga is right out of Road Warrior, but not as dangerous as the fossilized two-line feeder in 152. So he then goes on to talk about the high read. Now, meanwhile, the concrete carcass of the recently canceled multi-billion-dollar high-speed rail system dots the skyline over Fresno. Bureaucrats now insist that more billions must be spent to ensure that a short segment of the least traveled route will be finished. Though they obviously do not anticipate spurring a new tourist or commercial corridor between Merced and Bakersfield. which is just kind of north and no man's land between L.A. and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. High-speed rail gurus insist on salvaging something of the boondoggle, not because they have an economic rationale justifying more dollars. They would just... which would be far better invested in improving freeways, airports, and rails, but largely out of pride and shame that this didn't work. In 1973, when I first visited and lived in Greece, the roads were medieval. The old Helikon airport, I need a Greek around, airport was dysfunctional, if not creepy. Highway rest stops were filthy. I've lived in or visited Greece in the ensuing 45 years, including occasionally after the 2008 meltdown. And yet today, the freeways, chief airport, and rest stops of poor Greece are in far better shape than they are in California. LAX's poor road access, traffic, uncleanliness, crowds, and chaos seems more pre-modern compared with the current Athenian airport. It's an eerie experience to see America's once premier state, currently at its supposed acme, now resemble Greece of the colonials a half a century ago. Power outages are characteristic of third world countries. Here in California, we are advised to brace for lots of them. Given that our antiquated grid apparently contributes to the brush fires on hot days, as a native, I do not remember a single instance of our 20th century state utilities shutting down service in the manner that they now routinely promise. Crime has increased in the last 3 years. It is an epidemic in local jails. San Francisco has the highest property crime rate per capita of any major city. The California prison system is a mess, and sanctuary cities ensure that illegal aliens charged with crimes will not be deported. Pick up a McClatchy newspaper, and you'll see the day's fare of Central Valley criminality, even after sanitation and editorialization, is mind-boggling. Now, California's cycle of wet boom years and dry bust years continue to because the state refuses to build 3 or 4 additional large reservoirs that have been planned for more than half a century, and that would store enough water to keep California functional through even the worst drought. The rationale isn't either that it is more sophisticated to allow millions of acres of feet of melted snow to run into the sea, or it is better to have a high-speed rail line from Merced to Bakersfield than an additional 10 million acre feet of water storage, or droughts. Basically, he's saying they have no good argument for this. 27% of Californians were not born in the U.S., a large minority of them residing in the United States legally. Yet California's universities, pop culture, are forefront of the salad bowl and identity politics policies that obstruct assimilation, integration, and intermarriage. The historical remedies for the natural tensions that arise within multiracial and multi-ethnic societies. So he's saying basically that integration, assimilation, and intermarriage heal a lot of those tensions, and politicians are essentially exploiting classes to continue through government policy. Yet again, California schools are usually in the bottom decile of national rankings. No one in polite conversation asks why that is, given that the state's K-12 schools used to be among the most competitive in the U.S. Yet again, in medieval fashion, the professional schools and science of technology of California's premier research universities are among the highest rated in the world. But yet many of the people that attend these universities do not send their kids to public elementary or high school. The California's DMV is terrible. And basically, he goes on to talk about how bad the DMV. I don't need to belabor how bad the DMV is. But the scandals in the DMV are multifarious. Thousands of motor vehicle registrations sent to the wrong people, including illegal aliens supposedly ineligible to vote, corrupt employees who sell commercial truck licenses, and private corporations who occasionally sell hard data, reservations, and appointments. Basically, people are trying to do a concierge service for the DMV. California now has the highest basket of sales, gas, and income taxes. With a state surplus and a slowing economy, one would think that the legislature and governor would pause before even considering more taxes. After all, a new federal tax law limits write-offs of state and local taxes to $10,000, which rapidly has spiked their taxes in these blue states. Yet the rule in California is to punish the upper middle class while pandering to the rich and romanticizing the poor. They're now considering new punitive inheritance taxes and an imposed internet sales tax. It just imposed the sales tax. So you basically, if you die, whatever they didn't tax, you can't leave the fruit of your labors to your children. The California's apocalyptic present has created an alternative universe and good third world style of pay-for-play services. To avoid the emergency room, the last time I used one, two gangs squared off in the waiting room to continue what their wounded members were under treatment for. Progressive Californians often paid for concierge medicine and anything private to avoid at all costs the state services. The coastal corridor elite often put their kids in Tony prep schools that have sprung up or vastly expanded. In the fashion of the 60s, white Southern academics, academies that were designed to circumvent federal desegregation edicts, elite progressives mimic these old-style segregationists and send their kids to green and multicultural schools, but never actually send them where it might be diverse. In fact, Jerry Brown, Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi all live in the upper income areas of California amongst the mega rich, and they never drive the same streets. They never go to the same hospitals. They don't use the same service that your average middle class person uses, and therefore no changes ever actually happen. So I think he makes a compelling case. You see a lot of societal rot in terms of government policies leading to a society that is crumbling. I think when you kind of look through all of these different facts, you go, there's a lot here that shows that there's some real big problems. And I think it's clear what the root of the problem is. I mean, blaming capitalism seems sort of, yes, blaming capitalism as Reinhold might do, seems sort of counterintuitive. Poor Dennis. So, I mean, when you hear some of that stuff, what do you guys think?
Well, I had a small problem with the article because I think they kept trying to he keeps trying to throw immigration under the bus as far as the reasons.
Yeah.
But really, the real problem there is if they would let those people be open and let them come in and work,
mm-hmm.
it might help improve and build up a middle class that's fleeing.
Well, right. The problem is the state.
But they can't do that.
But the state welfare system, it is illegal for an immigrant for 5 years to get. You have to be a naturalized citizen for 5 years to access federal welfare.
Right.
But you can get city and state welfare, and yeah. that's why.
And that's a decision they've made.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why California is so attractive, is because. And that's why they have so much of the influx of population there, is because people are going there
also,
for welfare services.
And it's also they treat people, they treat the immigrants coming in there as human beings and not, you know, the reason for their failures or the taking their jobs or whatever. They actually right. treat them somewhat respectfully, so that's where they're going to want to go.
By stealing from productive members of society and giving them...
No, I mean, the illegal aliens, I mean, the illegal people are working and have to pay taxes. They're paying
stuff. I get what you mean. Yes, yeah. I get what you mean.
It's part of it, not because of the fact that there's immigrants there. It's because they're trying to come up with an outcome, and they're trying to manipulate things, and they're trying to do all these things in government-wise. I mean, look at all of the different rules that come out of government that we have to deal with across the country because of California.
Yeah.
Mileage laws and what we do with, you know, what cars can have. I mean, that's all
emission
because of
standards.
Yeah, emission standards from California. Everything, if you look at just about any product and you see some warning about PCBs or cancer causing or something like that, it's because somebody in California trading themselves a job of some sort in government has decided that this is what should be on there, and businesses want to do business with California, so you just put it on everything. So now we all have to deal with the insanity that's out there, and it's mostly just because so many people are working for the government and just trying to keep themselves employed by just busy work.
Right. Mm.
I would say this, the company I work for, we have employees and stuff like that in California, and it is the worst place to try to deal with. Like, if something happens, right, and they call you and they try to use their cell phone, you've got to get them to stop, because the moment they start using their cell phone, and because of California, the laws are, I've got to pay the bill, even though I didn't tell them to use their phone. I gave them something else, you know, but that breaks, they break down and use their phone. Guess what? We're paying that freaking bill. And it's like, oh, no, No, I'm not paying that. I didn't ask you to use that. There's something perfectly fine at your desk. Go use that. Well, I don't want it. It's just like, doesn't matter.
See, here's the thing.
That's what I'm paying for.
I adore L.A. and the fact of the climate, the feeling, the beauty of it. Santa Barbara, beautiful. You go, I drove from San Francisco, almost San Francisco, down that coastal highway all the way to L.A., and it was just hours of just beautiful area. I stopped at San Simeon, got to check out the Hearst Castle. Fell in love with Big Sur, driving through Big Sur. It's just, it's beautiful. So I have an affinity for wanting to live there, but there's no way I would move there because the people are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's way too expensive. So why would I do that to myself? I can... live here and put a lot more money away and have more stuff than I could if for what I pay in a for a house and 40 acres here, I could not buy a house there.
Yeah, but how much was your mule?
Well, the mule comes with it.
So yeah. I had family members who very well off lost a house in California. It was, you know, like a couple thousand square feet. It was like $2 million. They move here. Yeah, they move here and they buy a house. No, it was $6 million for like 3,000 square feet. They move here on Geist, which is one of the swankiest areas of town, right on a reservoir, and they get $1 million home and they get like 13,000 square feet, like or something crazy. I mean, the cost of living in California, everything was 50%. Like, if you went to the gas station to get a bottle of water, it was $4. It wasn't $2 or $1.22 like it is here.
And a lot of that's tax.
Yeah.
It is. It's artificially inflated.
And the artificially inflated tax of the gas, which they're doing partially just to get people not to use the gas, that gets added into all the different products and services that people have to use to transport those goods and services around. So they have to stop to pay the gas.
Yeah,
so it's increased this cost. It's increased that cost. It's just a blooming effect when you try to do stuff like that.
Gas was $4.60. Fast food meal cost about $10. Mm-hmm. You know, here gas is like $3.20, and then a fast food meal is like $7.20.
You're not even shopping around for $3.20.
The minimum wage in California should probably be $15, $20, and it probably is for a lot of people working there. But when you try to make it a national thing, and that's the real problem, is that they're trying to national this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
$15 an hour here is pretty good for a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, it just doesn't being work.
That, it's
getting $15 an hour, like living in like Shelbyville or something like that.
Oh, when I was trying to go to college, I was working for the post office sorting center as a second job at night, and I was getting $12 an hour, and it was amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Super rich.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of this stuff is well intentioned, like the homeless thing with the bathrooms.
Yeah.
It's just that when you look to the government to solve every problem and control every behavior and try to use the force of government to create outcomes, it just leads to failure and people getting hurt.
And, it subjects all those decisions not to just what's the best thing to have happen, but politics then comes into play.
Yes.
And then it's about who is going to get the power, who's going to get the recognition, who's going to gain this and gain that, and
What group are we going to bonus with this contract? So from a utilitarian point of view, if you're looking at, is this policy good because we're looking at the outcome? What is the outcome of things? There never seems to be a recognition that in California that what we're doing is not working. Mm-hmm. All of these trends are going the wrong way. What's the common denominator? They blame capitalism or something abstract or wealth inequality.
They never
go, how is that wealth inequality constructed and what decisions did we make? You heard it in that one article in the New York Times. They blamed it on the low tax guy.
Yeah. Right. Which is like, honestly, the main thing that could probably solve most of California's problems to get someone from the forester.
Right.
And let them run and go like, all right, just like a bear, you give a bear food, shelter, all this stuff, they're going to stay around here. So first thing I'm going to do is cut the bear's food supply off. Teach that bear to go back in the wild and fend for himself.
If you've listened to our wildfire episode where I detailed the problem with wildfires and how they're created basically by government policy, you don't want somebody from the forestry running. You basically have somebody from the forestry
running.
That's a perfect example, too, is that people who understand how forests work try to tell these people, no, you should do it this way. And they don't listen to them because the government gets politics involved. Right. And they say, no, we have to make it this and this and this because of politics reasons. And they make the bad decisions, and it causes problems. It's constantly.
So you're right. If California was just built suburbs and towns and all these concrete jungles, forest fires just, yeah, just stops because can't cause a highway. 6 mile
parking lot, the whole place, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Let's start. Go ahead, Harry. Last point, and then we'll start wrapping up.
Oh, no, I was gonna go into a tangent about Elon Musk's stupid tunnel and all this, like making. But it's
you
okay.
You don't like the Zephyr?
I don't. I'm not a huge fan of Elon Musk.
I hear it's 10 trains right now.
Oh,
yeah, 10 cars. They've added one.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
Very few people got that joke. All right, let's give our final thoughts for this. Go ahead. Let's start with Reinhold.
All right. So, like I said, I think the real problem is that LA is beautiful. That area is wonderful to live in, except for all the people and all of the government and all of the rules and all the regulations and everything crushing the soul out of the area.
Right.
Right. So it's unfortunate, but because it's such an attractive place to live, people are going and flocking there. And the crushingness of the government there is causing the people who are most productive in their society, keep the society running, to flee. And it's going to collapse in on itself. And they can't figure it out. I don't understand why they can't see this and take a step back and say, maybe it's not.
Maybe it's us.
Yeah. Maybe it's less
not,
government.
It's not you. It's me.
We're not doing enough. We're not right. doing this. We're not doing that. We're not making this happen. We're not making that happen. You can't make things happen. Sometimes things have to happen organically for them to have any real lasting effect. And they're not allowing any of that to happen.
Yeah.
And it's just ironic knowing that the northern part of the state is actually really mm-hmm. conservative. Ronald Reagan was the governor at one point.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger was the governor not too long ago.
I mean, Nixon 68 yeah. to 72, and then Reagan. I mean, the Republican Party in California was very strong.
Right.
And they made a lot
it's
of
just
errors.
Just L.A. is so dense.
I think
they need the Electoral College.
Well, here's part of the census question. So If you may have heard about the census, and they want to put a citizenship question on the census. Yeah, well, and so, and if you've read more about it, but as I understand it, if you were to put a citizenship question on the census, and people answered honestly, because it's a sworn affidavit, I think, that they're citizens or not, and then you basically say, we're going to reapportion the House and electoral votes based on legal citizens and not population, then you'd lose a bunch of seats in all these blue states and blue cities.
It'd also be unconstitutional. But
yeah, I would have to ask them to define citizen, because I would probably because mark
the
that.
Constitution is about
we haven't defined citizen.
The Constitution is not – the census is not about who's a citizen. It's about who is living in the area.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with citizenship.
Right.
So, I mean, at the time
– so you'd have to pass a constitutional amendment
yes.
to redefine, and which you'd never get through because –
Right.
Yeah, okay. I gotcha. And so that's why Republicans want this, is because they don't want the – you're giving California, for instance, all this extra power because of – illegal citizens, but as you just pointed out, it's human bodies in the area, not citizens.
Yeah, it's about who is supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to have a representative, so the people there should, figuring out how many representatives you get is how many people you're representing, is nothing to do with, I mean, at the time the Constitution was written, only white men landowners could be citizens.
Right.
They counted everybody. That's why they had the three-fifths rule for the black people from the slaves, because people say, well, they're trying to say that slaves were only three-fifths of a human, and it's not what they were doing. They were trying to cut back the power that the plantation owners and mm-hmm. slave owners would get
right.
if they were counted as a full person.
Hmm.
So it was an accounting trick, and it doesn't say anything about the humanity of it. It just says this is how we're going to do this to make sure that those people are not as powerful in the new government. It was a balance that they did. So, I mean, it was always about people living in an area. There was no such thing as illegal people, illegal right. immigration. There was no such thing about it being about citizenship, because citizenship was very limited at the time. So,
well, now you don't have to do that daily because you just screech about it.
Oh, no, there's so much more I can talk about.
There's so much more of it. And then, because that's another reason I said, please define citizen.
Right.
Please define it, because the way it's defined and the way, it, you know, just define the term. Second is, like, then devil's advocate, then can you count illegals as 3/5 then? Can you get that passed? That might be able to get past. Yeah. The other thing with
I'll let you suggest that. Harry, I'll let you suggest that, because Reinhold and I are not taking that one. That one's on you.
Just take that
find Joe Ruiz, and we'll have Joe do that one.
The thing is, this is not the first time.
Yeah, because you had a bad idea and it pushed all the good ones right out of your head.
It's not the first time someone has put something controversial on the census or put optional questions on there.
Like, there was one about dick size and your votes, the amount of votes you powered up if you were over 6 inches.
And how many?
1973.
I've filled out several censuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot.
How many questions do you think I answer on mine?
One.
Yep.
I'm here.
How many people live at this address? That is answered.
Yeah.
Everything else is left blank. I send it back in. I've never been called on it. It's technically I'm supposed to, by law, there's all these rules and regulations and I'm supposed to fill out and answer all this stuff. I'm like, nope. The Constitution says it's about how many people live in an area. There's no reason, because I have Fifth Amendment rights about being secure in my papers and my privacy. You don't need this information. You have to prove that you need this information in order to get it, and you can't do that.
Yeah. Correct. And that's... All right, I want to, like, and that's the thing
now
I want you to
do the daily.
No, you still got to do the daily, because I want you to go down the hypothetical holes. Like, okay, what if they just added an addendum or just added a sheet of paper? Oh, yeah, here's the first, we're going to present you with this. Then here's just, you know, they could just do that too. That's also perfect.
Well, they can add all kinds of things to the census, but
yeah, they can add. But hey, no. I'm sorry, I'll stop the wrap up derail.
Final thoughts, Harry.
Except for this area of the episode. Oh, what time is it? Oh, crap.
We're doing like an hour and 20 minutes right now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As I was peeing, because I just went to pee, I'm like, you know what we ought to do? We ought to do like an hour and then put the other hour behind the paywall. Like, so because
that's when we get a little giddy.
People get freaked out by the time.
That's true.
And then when we get to some of these details, we're like, I'm reading stuff. Mm-hmm. That's for the real nerds. Like, put that behind the paywall. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that may be what we
nerds.
Right.
I'll let you edit all that.
Yeah, California.
Yeah. Welcome to my life.
California's a third world country. At least the southern part of it. That's why I can sympathize with the people from the northern California wanting to break away from the bottom half.
Yeah.
It is... And the people there are all, they don't, it's, their minds are drugged down by the gravitational pull of all the poop in that area, and they can't think straight. They have poop-minded ideas, and they're just pulled down by it. I enjoy the company of a lot of our California people, but I sat and had lunch with one of them, right? And they were complaining about how some of their friends were going to become millionaires because some of the companies were going IPO. And I simply showed her how she can become a millionaire working for making the exact same much money she has if she just moved to Indiana, took what she was getting taxed up, and just threw it in a 401k. Just never touched it.
Right.
And I was like, you will be a millionaire. You will be one. Just leave, you know, and just take what you were being taxed. Never touch that. And just throw that. In a crappy 401k. Just the crappiest one you can find. You'll still be a millionaire.
Well, you seem very passionate.
I've always kind of said that where people live and the climate that they live in does dictate a lot about their personality and how they see life.
Because
you think about northerners, very fast talking because it's cold. And they have to try and keep going and just keep busy.
66 degrees.
You talk to people in Louisiana and Alabama, and they're like, they're so just relaxed and calm and slow. And it's like that with California. I mean, it's such, you get into a mindset out there because of the climate that you almost feel like you're in a different world.
Yeah.
And I think people start to buy into it. You live there long enough, you start to kind of just island yourself into this weird mindset.
It's 66 degrees in the studio. It's freezing in here. I've been freezing the whole episode. Please send blankets.
You know what?
I love it.
It's great.
Take the next month off.
And
tired of your sass.
And the last thing I want to do is I like to issue a public apology to Lou. Sorry.
I thought he had to apologize to you.
Yeah, but I felt bad. I criticized another man smoked on his grill, which is not good. I should have did it in a more private venue instead of in front of people.
Did you question his manhood?
I didn't question his manhood. I thought his rub was pretty good, but
question a man's rub, you question his manhood.
I didn't question his rub. I questioned his ribs. Okay?
Wow.
All right.
That is,
you know, and I just want to say I'm sorry. I should have did that.
Brutal meat judgment happening at Midwest Liberty Fest.
Yeah, I brutally meat judge Lou, and I shouldn't have done that. I should have did that in a more private venue. And I'm, you know, I'm public apology saying sorry.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. I don't know that I have a lot more to add than what they just said, but yeah, I think liberals and conservatives both would do, and libertarians too. I think. We don't do a great job of articulating sort of the utilitarian view, which is, look at the results. It's like whenever somebody says to me, well, in a libertarian society, you'd have X, Y, and Z. Well, look at the warlords that would take over. I mean, oh, like John Bolton, who's already in charge, but now he has a military behind him that's a standing army. Like, I think a lot of this stuff that that people concoct out of fear for what a libertarian society might look like has already happened, but it's 10 times worse because the force is centralized behind a big, massive central government.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you just have to start pointing out, like, look at the costs. Like, look at, you know, like with the child separation stuff at the border, this is the end result of Trumpian immigration policy. Are you okay with it? Like, if you tell me that you're just a sociopath and you're okay with children dying from flea-ridden bedding, like, all right, I can just write you off as a barbarian. But, like, if you're not okay with that, then you need to reconcile the fact that this is the end result of closed borders. Like, this is what closed borders look like, and it's just as taxation, for instance, is a blockage in the free flow of capital, an asset for building a business. Immigration is a block in the free flow of labor, another asset. So, and when you start blocking that, when you start damming that, there are consequences to it. And blocking the consequences of robbing a society of its monetary resources and importing too much labor in California is absolutely destroying that society. By the same token, it's when you don't have enough labor to actually stall growth. So I think you have to look at this stuff and you have to go, like, why do you guys think this is a good idea? Look at the results. Like, the results are clear. Data is usually, you can kind of get at the truth and get at the data and understand what's going on. So that's what I would do. Please join our Patreon. We are going to talk a little bit about what it's like to be behind the scenes of Joe Rogan. And then we'll talk about Harry's experience at Midwest Liberty Fest. So check that out. That will be our bonus episode this week. Thank you so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians, and we will talk to you next week.